And welcome along to a cloudy and a little bit of a misty Thursday morning. A special late week episode of the Drew Buzney Show is coming your way on WRUC 89.7, the first station in the nation, live from beautiful Union College in Schenectady, New York. Today on the show, we talk about the second major of the year in golf. The PGA Championship just underway in Louisville, Kentucky. We talk about my expectations, what I think the week is going to look like, my picks. We also talk the Celtics, who advanced their third straight Eastern Conference Finals yesterday. They're sixth in the last 8 years. My worries about that team, even though they keep on winning. And Bruins, tomorrow night, a must-win Game 6, trying to flip the script against the Panthers and come back from a 3-1 series deficit. All that next on a late week episode of the Drew Buzney Show. And welcome back in to the show. Let's just kick it off right away. We talked the PGA Championship, the golf's second major of the year, right after the Masters, and I believe as this moment, the last time I checked was about 20 minutes ago, Xander Schauffele was leading the way at 4 under par. Again, this tournament being played at Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm just going to start, let's just get into it. The leader, we'll start with the leader right now, Xander Schauffele. And, you know, you may think that because of this start, Xander Schauffele is going to win. But if you know anything about the PGA Tour, you know anything about Xander Schauffele, do not put your money on that man. Time after time again, not just this year, but the past couple years, he comes out and he plays these great rounds. Let's say it's maybe 2-3 great rounds for the first, you know, 2 or 3 days, and he puts himself in contention. A lot of times he puts himself with the lead. You saw that last week in the Wells Fargo Championship. You also saw it in the Players where he was going into the final round tied, or I think either one up or one down for the lead. And when that happens and Xander Schauffele has a lead or is in contention going into the last day or two, never bet on him. That is a losing bet 100% of the time. That man is no clutch gene. He can play 3 good days and get himself in a position to make a lot of money, but he really struggles to put himself into a position to win a trophy. And he had a lead going into the final day of the Wells Fargo Championship and ended up losing by 6. And yes, Rory McIlroy played lights out, but to lose by 6? I mean, he got outshot by, what, 7 strokes? I think, I don't know if this is true, but I think Rory was like 7 under, or 8 under, and Xander was 1 under, and that's just absurd. I mean, you have the lead, like, you have control in the tournament, and you just can't close it out. He's not a closer. If you look at Tiger Woods, whenever it came down to that clutch putt on the 72nd hole or 71st hole, you know, you knew that was going in. But with Xander, it's mind-boggling because it's not like he's a bad golfer. He's a really good golfer. Great fundamentals, great swing. He knows how to score. He knows how to go low. He's done it before. But yet, when he gets into these big tournaments, like the signature events, like the Players, like the majors, he can't figure out a way to continue that play to the point where he can go to the 72nd hole saying, I'm going to win this thing. He plays 54 good holes, and then bam, he just falls off a cliff, and everything goes downhill and crumbles below him. And it's just weird because he should be so much better than he is. And we think by now he should be a major champion. And yes, winning a major is hard. It's the hardest thing to win in golf. But it is without a doubt that Xander Schauffele has the skills to do so. He just can't, you know, I don't know if the word's being clutch, but he can't, you know, put together the last 18 holes. He can play 54 holes out of his mind, but when it comes down to that final round and he has a chance to win, he just cracks under pressure. And, you know, I don't really know what the fix is there because it's not like it's a one-time thing. It's a reoccurring thing. It's probably happened 4 times this year where, you know, he's played well and then, you know, he loses. He's in the final group. The second to last group, whatever it is, and bam. Then he falls off the leaderboard, and you really never see him again. And so it's just a little weird. But we start at the top, and he's winning right now, but do not expect to see him at the top come Sunday. He will fall off eventually. He always does. You know, this PGA Championship, the PGA America did a great job. They kind of stayed away from the PGA Live battle, and when they give out their exemptions, because some players get exemptions if they don't make it based on winning and points in the FedEx Cup and the official World Golf Rings, they gave out their exemptions to both Live and PGA players who deserved a shot. They gave it to Taylor Gooch, Dean Burmester, if you don't know, they're on the Live Tour, and, you know, they don't have the official World Golf Rankings or, you know, the PGA Tour eligibility to play, but Taylor Gooch won the whole Live season last year. Dean Burmester has been on a tear in Live Golf, playing really well, and so they were able to look past this mess that's going on in golf, and were able to create the strongest field in golf of players, regardless of their tour, that are playing right now. They took the hottest players in golf, all players that are playing well, you know, plus the pros, like the PGA Tour pros, not the Tour pros, the club, country club pros, and, you know, the people that have won the PGA Championship, and they made a strong field of winners and people playing their best golf right now. And that's exactly what you want going into a major, especially when it's one of the only times where the PGA players and the Live players get to play together again. Like, we get this, we can reminisce of the old days of the PGA Tour when you got to see these players week in and week out actually competing against each other. So, just all props off to the PGA Championship. I think they did a great job. The course looks really hard. I mean, the U.S. Open's always the one that you really want it to be uneven. The Country Club a couple years ago in Brookline, that was about 5-under. Wasn't really a fan of LACC, Los Angeles Country Club, last year. That score was a little too low in the teens. But I would love all the major championships to be around even par. I mean, it's supposed to be a major championship. It's supposed to be the hardest golf courses, you know, three, four times a year. The Masters, like, Augusta National's hard, but, you know, the scores always end up getting into the teens. It's just the way it is. I mean, it's a hard course, but that's what happens. But especially with the U.S. Open and the PGA, I love when the scores are low. I love when, you know, the cut is +3 and people really struggle. Like, you want to be able to connect with these golfers, and you don't want to see them, you know, hitting it to 1 foot every time. You want to see them struggle, be like all the hacks that are in my family. But yeah, like, it's so cool to see them struggle, see them get pissed off, like my brothers, when they don't play well, like always. But yeah, it's like I'm watching my whole own family play golf. So it's really cool to see, really, really cool to connect with them. They're going to hate me for making those jokes, but it's okay. And just the other storylines going in, other than the great field that they've constructed, is, you know, what I think of the top three players right now is in Brooks Koepka, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy. They're all coming off wins. So they're all playing their best. They're all, you know, they know how to win. They know what it takes. They're playing great golf these past couple weeks. So you just look at this and you say, oh my God, like, this could be the major of the century. The top three players in the world are playing their best golf. You know, everyone else behind them is not terrible right now. They're all, you know, doing better. I mentioned in our Masters show that I didn't think anyone, you know, the star players were playing well. But, you know, we're kind of getting to that peak golf season where you're playing more and, you know, it's warmer and you're kind of, you got the early season jitters and problems out of the way. And, you know, people are starting to play well now. The tour players are playing well. The Live Golf players are playing well. And so, what could happen this week is totally unknown, but I have a feeling it's going to be one of the greatest majors we've seen. Just the fact that, you know, the golfers we want to be in contention, all playing great. You know, yes, there's still the noise of Live and PGA, but I feel like people are starting to put that behind them. Even not the NBC golf broadcasters, they still hate Live Golf, but I think, you know, the players are definitely trying to move on, find this deal. I think there's definitely still problems, but it seems like, you know, it's, at least in the player's mind, it's more of an afterthought. I think in the media's mind, it's not. But that's what the media does. They blow everything out of proportion, and they talk about the things that, you know, the players aren't talking about and try and make ridiculous points. But, I mean, it could be unbelievable. Scottie Scheffler, interesting. I don't, like, he's the best golfer in the world. I always wonder that, you know, he wins Masters, RBC, then he takes 2 weeks off. And, like, how is that going to affect him? I don't really think it is, just because he's that good of a golfer. And I guess he was practicing at home. He had his kids, so, I mean, he's probably been preoccupied. But, I mean, in the back of my head, I think he's going to do good. I don't think he's going to win. Just, like, I think, you know, family is the most important, and that's what he's been focused on the past 2 weeks. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, family always is the most important thing in life. He said that. That's what I believe, too. Like, I would do the same exact thing if I was in his shoes. I would love to be as good as a golfer as him. But so I think for some reason I think Rory. I mean, you just look at the similarities between the last time he played Valhalla and won, you know, coming off a win, the stuff in his personal life with his partners. I mean, everything just lines up for like this coronation of Rory McIlroy to finally win that major again after this decade-long drought. And then you look at Brooks, who just won LIV Golf Singapore. I mean, to go back-to-back for the third time in a major championship, now be twice at a PGA championship and once at US Open. I mean, what a week we're in store. We're already underway. It can only get better. But I wouldn't do it justice if we did not talk about Tiger Woods. And I'm going to stand by my opinion that he is overhyped. He's no longer a good golfer. The best days are behind him. I'm not discrediting that he's the greatest golfer of all time. I'm just saying that, you know, his career is on the downhill. You know, he plays four tournaments a year in the majors. And, you know, how are you supposed to get better if you only play the best tournaments? He doesn't have any warm-up tournaments. He doesn't play 2 weeks before the majors to get back into that competitive mindset. He just jumps right into the deep end without, you know, any prep other than just hitting balls on the range or playing by himself. Without this mindset that I'm here to win a trophy, even if it's a lower level tournament that's not a major. So I don't think this week he's going to make the cut. I think he made the cut at the Masters because he knows that tournament so well and he knows that course so well. I don't think he's going to make the cut this week. I don't think the course fits him. I think it's too long. I think it's too challenging, maybe a little bit too hilly. So I'm going to predict right now Tiger Woods will not make the cut. And let's say he does and he proves me wrong, he will finish last place. So that is my take there. Other than that, I think it's just going to be a great week. But that's it for the golf section today. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll get into our Boston sports as usual. Thank you again for joining me on WREC 89.7. As always, I'm Drew Buzney, and you are listening to The Drew Buzney Show. The Celtics last night beat the Cavaliers at home in Game 5 to book their trip to their third straight Eastern Conference Finals. They would most likely play on Sunday or Tuesday against the Pacers or the Knicks. I really don't want to play the Pacers. I just think that they are a really fast-paced team, hype team, you know, really energetic. And I feel like in any game they could come out and the Celtics have this tendency to kind of be laid back at the start of games. You know, there's not really a sense of urgency. And I just feel like the Pacers do the exact opposite, and they really start the game with urgency. They really love to play fast, you know, run, you know, shoot a lot of threes, be, you know, this cool team, kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters is kind of how how I look at them. And I just feel like that is the team that could steal a couple from the Celtics and make it more of a stressful series. On the other hand, the Knicks, who I believe will beat the Pacers, luckily, in their semifinals matchup. You know, they are an injury-ridden team. Even when their players come back, they're still not going to be 100%. And I just feel like we match up better against them. I'm not too worried about playing in Madison Square Garden. I think it's overhyped. People love it for some reason. I just think it's an old, rundown building. It has its history, but yeah, TD Garden is better. And Boston Sports are better than New York Sports. But that's not the conversation for right now. But I think it's just the fact that they're an injury-ridden team, you know. Everything depends on Jalen Brunson, so all you really have to do is just attack him, and I think their whole world comes to a ground. I mean, with the Celtics, it's, you know, it's the fact that we have five-star players, so if you attack one, you know, you have four other players, you know, to take control. I kind of think of it as like a snake. You chop off the head and four grows in its place. I kind of feel like, you know, if you block off Jason Tatum, you have Brown, White, Holiday, and maybe Porzingis if he's back, you know, to carry the load. And the thing with Tatum is, people don't see it as a step. I do. I mean, the team is winning even when he's not shooting well, and I think that's a testament to Tatum is he's realizing when, you know, it's not his night to score, and he focuses on the assists, the defense, and the rebounds, and I don't think, you know, the media really takes into account that. But he's doing things beyond scoring, and scoring is not the only thing that matters. You know, he's making winning plays, physical plays that maybe not go in the stat sheet, but if you watch the game and you watch how he plays, they're valuable plays that add to the winning. And it's without them, we will lose. Or we wouldn't win by as much. But he does the little things. He's starting to do the little things better when, you know, it's not his night to score, which is really great to see. It's an evolution of what he used to be when he wasn't scoring. You know, the past couple years, he would just heave up shots. I see that less now, and I'm proud that that is happening. The one worry that I have is I feel like we played bad teams. I don't think the Cavaliers were this championship caliber team like we are. I don't think the Heat were a championship caliber team. So I feel like we've been used to playing down to these people. We've had few clutch games, and it's been just a lot of, you know, one-on-one matchups. And, you know, when we play a championship caliber team like the Knicks, albeit that they're injury ridden and that they may not have all their star players, they're still a good team coached by a great coach. And, you know, you're going to have to play this team ball. I know certainly the Knicks do. You know, it has to be this pass first mentality. Go for the open shot. It's not a one person dribbles, you know, you pass it out, the next person dribbles in. It's just, you know, this constant one-on-ones. And when your one-on-one doesn't work, you pass it off to another player for their one-on-one. No, it's, you know, backdoor screens, cuts, you know, team ball where you're able to feed off each other and get the defense running and scrambling. And, you know, that's the evolution of the playoffs I feel like you need to see. My dad, who's very frustrated when he watches Celtics games, loves to criticize not only the announcers for some reason. I don't know why he ever wants to criticize the announcers. They're not involved in the game. They're not winning or losing the game, but whatever. He likes to criticize the team movement, the ball, the passing. And, you know, for once, I can agree with his frustration. He's mad for 48 minutes. I don't think I'm mad for 40 minutes for the whole game, but he just loves to be mad for some reason. But he's right. I'm going to give him his credit. He's going to probably be in shock that I gave him his credit. But he's right in this moment that, you know, in order to win and to play these caliber teams like the Knicks and the Nuggets, you're going to have to play team ball. And the Celtics, you know, they have glimpses of it, but they've really not developed into this playoff team ball that they really need to just lock in the championship. I think, like, they still have a chance to win if they play this one-on-one mentality. I think it's going to be rough. I think you're going to lose the couple games. And it's not going to be as easy and as straightforward as you think. I think it's just going to add stress and frustration. And, you know, the media is going to be all over the Celtics. And it's just going to be more anger and annoyance than straight sailing to the finals. Talking about, you know, this playoff push, we have the Bruins down 3-1 to the Floridas. And I don't really have much to say other than I have the gut feeling that's a reversal of last year. If you don't remember, you know, Bruins blew a 3-1 lead to the Panthers. This year, the Panthers had a 3-1 lead on the Bruins. We won just one game 5 to bring it back to Boston for game 6, now 3-2. And gut feeling, it's just the reverse. So it has to be, right? Like, the world has to do this. The higher powers have to do it to us. We blew a 3-1 lead. Now they're going to blow a 3-1 lead. And so it's just this gut feeling. And, you know, it all comes down to shooting the puck. You know, you saw in the games 3 and 4 when the Bruins were home, they got outshot, like, in a ratio of 2-1, which is absurd. You know, it's all this passing, no shooting. It's just pass, pass, pass. You know, they never get any shots off, and you're never going to score if you don't shoot. And you can't depend on Jeremy Swayman, you know, to stop 50 shots a game. I mean, yes, he's a phenomenal goalie. He's playing absolutely amazing, the best player on the team right now. But if he gets 40 shots on net, yes, he's going to let in 2 or 3. I mean, no one can go really 4 for 40. It's unheard of. Maybe once, but it's not something you can do for a 7-game series. So it's as the crowd chanted in TD Garden a couple days ago, that you have to shoot the puck. And I thought when the Bruins came out in Game 5 in Florida, you know, they quickly got out, and they were out shooting Panthers 10-3. They got a quick goal. And so I think it's just that first 10 minutes. Set the tone with the shots and the physicality. And, you know, the Panthers love to flop and drop penalties and, you know, do the things that, like, bad teams do, don't really believe in themselves, flop, be babies, you know, all that stuff that, you know, get people annoyed with them. But honestly, like, the Bruins should just take one out of their playbook. They should be the physical team, and if the Panthers retaliate, you flop. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but, you know, the Panthers started it, and, you know, I guess you just have to play on their level, even though I think we're, like, the more of the mensch team in this series. You know, I think the Panthers, I'm struggling because I can't say what I want to say about the Panthers on live air because we'll get fined. But I just think they're a bunch of babies, and all they do is flop and cry and complain. And then they get, you know, the refs to call goals in their favor when, you know, they're obvious penalties. But that's for another time. That's for me to complain when the Panthers win the series, which I strongly don't believe will happen because it has to be fate that the Bruins come back from 3-1. But we will be back on air next Tuesday. We will be previewing probably Game 1 or Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and hopefully Eastern Conference Finals of the Bruins. But thank you for sticking with me on this delayed show this week on this beautiful Thursday right now. Have a great week. I'm going to get back to watching the PGA Championship. It'll be on at noon on ESPN. It's on ESPN Plus right now. So enjoy the golf. Enjoy the Celtics. Enjoy life. Keep on being happy. See you all next week.